Thank you so much for listening to the Midlife Rewired podcast. If this content is useful to you, please subscribe, rate, and share with your friends and loved ones. Episode number 16 of the Midlife Rewire podcast. This will be my first remote podcast, and my guest today is my sister, who lives in Los Angeles, California. Welcome, Laura.
Hello, welcome. Thank you, Brian. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, we're going to be able to catch up on our weekly chat and do a podcast sort of at the same time, so it's perfect.
I know. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, so I just wanted a quick side note on the podcast itself. I mean, this it's a work in and of progress, and you know, essentially the intention of this is to, and purpose will always be to help people reduce stress, live happier and healthier lives. And then this, so being able to now record these remotely will give me a lot bigger opportunity to talk to more guests. So it's kind of a turning point here at episode number 16 for us. So. Okay, so the topic today is Fit Over 40. This is the Fit Over 40 episode. And you know, I asked my sis to join me today because you know, I would say that you know, we're both probably pretty much in the best shapes of our lives physically. I think we're probably the healthiest we've ever been. And you know, my sis is younger than I am, but I'm like a lot closer to 50 than 40 at this point. So we're just going to talk a little bit about that and sort of our routines and habits and kind of what got us here. How's that sound for you, sis?
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
All right. So so maybe we'll start off at the present moment, sis. I mean, what are you up to these days with your fitness and diet and everything?
Sure. So fitness obviously has been a big part of my overall lifestyle for several years now, but you know, stemming back to when we were kids and me being influenced by you, that's sort of where it all started. Right now, you know, last year I just kind of did my own thing, and I was sort of doing some experimentation with food and training, and I was really trying to maintain my weight and achieve goals on my own. Typically, I'll hire a coach when I'm getting ready for a competition, and I've learned a lot through coaches. But last year, I wasn't going to compete. I wanted to take some time off and travel and just focus, you know, on other things and relationships and having some fun. And I did all that, and it did feel like there was something missing for the entire year. Maybe it's my competitive nature, or I also like the structure. So I knew last fall that I was going to do a competition this year, and I was just sort of trying to suss out, you know, when I should do that. And as Christmas went by, I got sick, I was tired, and I said, you know what, it's time to get back on that horse, because I really like the structure and I really like the goal setting. And so I just started prep less than a week ago, and I hired a new coach. Her name is Casey Sampsol. She's fantastic. And so far, and we did like about 5 weeks of a lot of eating and a lot of heavier training to kind of get back into the rhythm. And now the dieting process has started. So that's where I'm at right now. And I'm pretty excited and tired.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like you said, you mentioned the coach thing as well, you know, I appreciate you saying I motivated you. I mean, for me, going back to a kid, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute, but I mean, I was always a really small kid, a late bloomer. So, and because I was a small kid and a late bloomer, I didn't necessarily get into athletics early. So I was basically lifting weights, like a fiend in our basement with those little Weider cement weight kits, you know,
well, so mom used to do the soup can diet or the soup can workout, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'd out of the basement and she'd be just going for it. It was great.
Right?
So I guess she influenced us.
Yeah, the 20-minute workout influenced me, but maybe in other ways. So
yeah, dad too.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, but having a coach, I mean, I trained for years and years and years without a coach or a trainer, you know, and I always had really good workout partners and guys who were competing in different things. And, you know, back in those days, there was the categories were not as diverse as they are now. So bodybuilding was really the only thing. And I definitely don't have a bodybuilder type body. So, but getting a good coach, you know, when I got a coach and started working with Michael Greyer, back in 2017, that's when really things started to change. And it's amazing how you can evolve your body even after like a couple decades of training with the right coach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that a big part of any fitness journey is, you know, following different people, learning different methods, trial and error. Not everybody's methods or plans are necessarily going to work for you, or, you know, you're going to find your groove, but it is a trial and error process. But you learn valuable information, invaluable information from different people. And I'm glad I've kind of switched things up a little bit here and there over the years, because every experience I take a little bit more information with me. So, but it's a game changer. You know, if you try to go out there and ask your friends what to do, or, you know, if you're just kind of like trying to figure it out all the time, you can do that. But if you want to be serious and you want to fast forward your results quicker, then I'm a huge fan of hiring professional help. you know, it'll make it less painful process learning things, you know.
There's also some accountability as well. So it's nice to have somebody to check into, because otherwise the only person checking is yourself. And, you know, if you skip that workout, or you don't quite hit the meal plan or whatever, then, you know, someone's going to be sort of wagging their finger at you and trying to get you back on track. So it's good for that. But you mentioned switching up the, you know, food. I mean, that's the biggest part about this whole game is your diet. And everybody's different. Everyone responds differently. But and every coach has a different philosophy. So it's interesting from that perspective too, to sort of trial and error to see what works for you and what's, you know, what's sustainable, healthy.
Right. You know, meal plans. I'm a huge fan of following some sort of plan with both your training and your meals. Again, a lot of the times people will, you know, I've repeated this over and over, like, go find a meal plan online and follow it. That does get you into the groove of understanding, you know, I need to eat this many meals a day, and I need to sort of eat this much protein, carbs, and fat. Like, you have to go through that process for your brain and your habits to sort of adapt to what you're doing. And it starts to make sense. And I was, you know, I've been doing that my whole life, but here's why the meal plans eventually failed for me. And I had to learn macro counting, because I would yo-yo diet. I would follow a meal plan for 8-10 weeks, and I had no way to really understand how to trade out foods or create variables within that plan. And it became fear-based almost. So I'd be afraid to eat anything else, which isn't healthy, you know, mentally. That can cause sort of eating disorders in your mind. And when I wasn't following the exact meal plan, I'd start putting weight back on. It would just start happening. And I was like, oh, you know, like there's gotta be another way. And I started to look at fitness competitor. I was following different ones, and Casey Samsel, my current coach, was one that I've been following for about 4 or 5 years. And I was watching her and others eating, you know, ice cream and waffles. And I'm thinking, how is this possible? How are they doing this? And these girls are fitness competitors on, you know, the Olympia level. And so I decided after my first competition that I wanted to go macro based diet science, and it's all scientific backed. And so I hired a coach named Emily Hayden, and Emily wasn't a fitness coach. She's a competitor. but I've been following her. She's younger than me. She's at least 10 years younger than me. Actually probably more than that. But I saw her, what she was doing and what she was eating. And then all of a sudden one day on her Instagram story, she said, I'm going to take on 10 bikini clients who want to compete. So the first 10 that contact me, I'm taking. I was the first call. I was the first email. I'm like, sign me up. Going to take on some bikini competitor clients. And I immediately jumped on that opportunity because I wanted to learn her. I wanted to learn how to eat a fitness diet and compete, but learn the macro counting way. So I can choose the foods, I can switch things out. And I knew it was a big learning curve at the beginning, but it's not rocket science, but it does require constant attention, constant measuring, and being completely aware of it. Now it's so habitual for me, I don't really think about it. I have a scale on my counter and I weigh everything I eat. That's how I'm doing my current prep, but that took a little while. And a lot of coaches out there, they don't do macro. They sell their fitness plans, which are easier and cheaper and less work for them. And I get it, but from a competitor standpoint, it can kind of burn you out because you don't know if you're allowed to eat anything else. And the monotony of eating the same thing over and over can really burn you out. So, yeah. I mean, I know that you know this.
Yeah.
I know that you know this. Anybody that's been following a meal plan for a really long time that's strict is, you know, probably losing their marbles after a while.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I remember that process of eating the same thing, but it wasn't necessarily that. It was more of the harsh starvation and lack of sleep because of it that really triggered me, I think. But
yeah,
actually, you know what? Well, I wasn't really a big fan of the stuffing yourself to bulk phase so much either. I mean, that was basically how I spent a lot of years. You know, I had that bro bodybuilding mentality where you, if you're hungry, you've already got the knife and fork out on your bicep and you're losing muscle kind of mentality.
Yeah.
Where now, I mean, I won't be competing anymore. I can talk about that in a minute, but now I do intermittent fasting, you know, a couple times a week. I really stretch out my meals. I've cut one meal out of my diet a week or a day, sorry. And I feel better. I just kind of like, but it's just like, it's a light hunger and, you know, your digestive system works better. And I feel like I have more energy that way. So, yeah, that's interesting. So basically from when you started working out to today, what do you think is like the biggest lesson or change in philosophy, I think, that you've sort of gained from that experience over the last couple of decades?
I think the biggest change, you know, in my life is fully accepting this as a lifestyle, and everything that I do revolves around, I mean, I have a real love for this. So, and I'm being my authentic self doing this. I remember when I was really young, you know, watching you get into fitness, but then I joined a gym in our little small town in Peterborough, Canada, called Good Life Fitness, and it was the women's only one. And I always woke up really early. I was always a morning person, even as a kid. And I remember getting up really early in the morning and driving to like 6 a.m. classes at Good Life Fitness in Peterborough and doing the 6 or 7 a.m. classes. I remember getting upset if I missed the 6. And I loved how I felt, like getting there in the morning, and then I love that feeling afterwards. That feeling, that euphoric endorphin rush feeling after a workout has never left me. And when I've gotten away from training, or I've been partying, or I'm just not following that, you know, that happiness that I receive from that simple thing is just, it's, I can't describe the feeling. I love it. You know, I got up this morning and I did yoga, and I feel, you know, I'm tired, but I'm really glad I went. Like, I feel good. It like sets the intention and the feeling for the day. And I don't ever want to give that up. So now that's what I do. that's what makes me happy. And going out on Saturday night and just getting buzzed and waking up and feeling like crap the next morning. Like, okay, I'm not saying I'll never go out. I do sometimes, but that is far and few between anymore. Like, I would rather get up and do my yoga. I would rather get up and weight train. And so that's probably been the biggest lesson, is fully accepting that. And this is my lifestyle, and everybody else has finally got it, but it took years to sort of reprogram other people to understand this is what I like to do, and this is what makes me happy. And that's, I don't know if you just caught that.
I did. And you know, I think that's a huge factor, that that people that work out is the fucking mindset around the way you say you love it. I mean, you've obviously have enough experience now to realize that, you know, the feeling after is worth the shitty feeling during sometimes, and even worse feeling of trying to get off the couch or after a busy day to go in traffic and go to the gym. But you know how you're going to feel better in the end. But having that mindset to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to fucking do this every single day. This is who I am. It's in my DNA. It's my lifestyle, as you said.
Yeah,
I think that's the biggest thing, and it's really hard to adopt that mindset at first, because it's hard. It fucking doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to have to go and get there, and then when you're there, you're like, fuck, you know, I to, you know, and to push yourself outside of your comfort zone, and you know, but when you do that every single day and you build your life around that hard shit, you start to build resilience from that too, and it carries over into so many other parts of your life.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, an extension of that is, you know, I still have my friends from, you know, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. Like, I've had different sets of friends because I've lived in two different countries, and that's all great. But as you go through this process too, like, you will find a support system and group of people. And I'll tell you this, a lot of the people that I hang out with that are fitness focused, that compete, they all have a story, and a lot of stories come from a place of, you know, I came from a shitty home. I had a parent that was abusive, or I was fat, I was obese, and I got, you know, I got teased a lot of, and a lot of people get into, you know, fitness to sort of heal. And you meet them, like, especially at competitions, I meet the most, we are going international here. So when the wind comes up in LA, the friggin' phones drop and the Wi-Fi tends to scatter. Sorry about that. I was just saying that, you know, you find like-minded people in this world, and everybody has a story. And I have met so many new friends that have a similar story where they put on a bunch of weight, or they used to be obese, or they used to get teased, or, you know, they had a parent that was abusive. Like, there, a lot of people turn to this world to heal. And it is healing. It absolutely is healing, because I think when you take care of yourself, it's self-love and self-care. And they also understand that euphoric, amazing feeling, you know, when you push yourself and put yourself through a process, the reward is so great. And so I love to tell my story when people ask me about how I got into fitness. And I love asking other people as well, because, you know, it's always usually some story where they've had to overcome something, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting, Sis. And yeah, I've met a lot of people like that too, who really have taken that, you know, some of those negative trapped emotions and things from their past, and they've worked through it in the fitness world. One of the things I think that really changed for me over the years with fitness is that before it was all based on a destination. So there was like a particular event that I would train for, usually just Saturday night to peel the jersey someplace in the fucking after hours, but or a vacation, or, you know, whatever, right? And I would get there and then, you know, probably blow myself to pieces and then not work out for a little bit and then get back into it again. And that stopping and starting is you know, that was the pattern I was in for quite a while, where now I have basically a no days off policy. And mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't mean I go and grind out heavy weights 7 days a week, but there's some type of body movement every day, whether I take a day off the gym or lifting to do yoga, I go hit the bag at the boxing club, even just a nice walk in the forest on a really, you know, quiet day, or just some light cardio or something. But for me, every single day, there needs to be some type of body movement. And that just sort of gives me that, like I said, resilience, but it just lifts me up in every other part of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, to my earlier point last year saying, hey, I wanted to sort of maintain, like I had competed in 2018 and I got fairly lean. It wasn't my overall best, but I, you know, was in good shape. I wanted to maintain that physique. And I knew from the yo-yo dieting of, from my first competition and previous to that as well, I would go through this on and off cycle, on and off cycle. And I'm like, I'm not going to use fitness competitions as a way to maintain my weight. And I know a lot of girls, and I included, have done it. You know, oh, I'm putting on all kinds of fat. I need to go compete. Like, that's not the right reason. But again, it would cause this like up and down cycle. And this, after my last competition, I knew in my mind, I'm like, I'm not going to yo-yo this time. I'm going to continue to track my meals. I'm going to continue to, you know, work out on a regular basis. And again, from previous experience, not working out and not following, you know, not eating proper nutrition wasn't making me happy. Okay. It was putting weight back on and I was partying and I wasn't paying attention to myself and it wasn't making me happy. What makes me happy is being on this journey, keeping my shit together, because it reminds myself that I'm strong mentally as well as physically. Yeah, and exactly. And that's rewarding. And so I walk around with that and I'm proud of that. And when someone looks at me and sees, you know, that I got my shit together, it's not just how I look, it's how I think. And that's why I want to communicate. And anybody can do this, you know, anybody can do this, but you got to commit to it. And it's a daily commitment. That's where it separates people who, you know, want it and people that do it. And it's just, that's the only difference. You just do it. You get up every day and you say, I'm doing this. And that's it.
So what would you recommend to someone? So say somebody is, you know, middle-aged. So they're kind of in this demo right now. And maybe they've stopped and started a couple programs over the last few years. They've never actually created the habit, or they haven't started at all, or maybe they've just been kind of coasting along and they're kind of stuck and unmotivated. What is there something that people can do? I mean, everyone talks about what is the fucking miracle program? What's the miracle diet? You know, and we all know there's no silver bullet outside of just hard work, but how do you start to get to that place where you get that momentum going, where it becomes a lifestyle?
Well, I think you have to commit. When you start, you have to commit to it long enough to start seeing those results. And most people drop off before they start seeing real results. Like, you know, for the first 4 to 6 weeks, nothing's happening. You know, even when you're competition dieting, the first 8 weeks, you're not really seeing that much. You know, you're seeing yourself get a little bit, you know, leaner. It's the last 8 weeks that you really see the results. You know, you have to be patient and you have to trust the process, but you have to start and commit to it. Now, I think the key ingredient is, number one, you need to find something that you like to do. You know, a lot of people say to me, oh, I don't like the gym. I don't like, you know, I don't like this, or I don't like running. I don't like running either. I hate it. Actually, that's not true. When I actually start running, I kind of zone out. It's like meditative, but that I don't want to run marathons and I don't want to blast my knees out. They're already like busted as it is. But for me, I really enjoy weight training. Some people really enjoy taking classes. Some people really like Pilates. If that's what you like to do, then you got to find the exercise or the fitness, whatever it is. And you got to try different things out. And you got to do something that you enjoy. Don't go to the gym and lift weights if you effing hate it. If you effing hate it, don't do that. Figure something else out. So that's number one key, is do something that you like. And then number two is, again, the food. You have to start thinking about food as a fuel source versus pleasure town. You know, there's always going to be like that massive piece of cheesecake. And I indulge sometimes. It's not that I don't, but I structure my meals around when I eat, when I go to bed. Because I only have so much food to eat a day, like I'll be like, all right, I eat about four meals a day, sometimes five right now, depending on, you know, how I structure them out. But instead of going, what's for dinner? I think, okay, I need to be able to sleep really well tonight. And by the way, here's a little fun fact. Fat keeps you asleep. So I eat my fattiest meal in the evening because it helps me stay asleep throughout the evening. If you eat a carb and protein meal and no fat, you're going to be staring at the ceiling all night. That happened to me last night. I was at my friend's and I had one more meal to eat, which was my fattier, sort of fatty. And I got home at like 10:30 and I didn't want to eat a whole meal and then immediately go to bed. So I had a shake and put some peanut butter in it, which was kind of, but that shit does that digest so fast. I was lying there. It was like 1:30 in the morning, starving. So that's why I ended up taking a little bit of a sleeping pill because I was, awake. Sorry, I'm getting off topic. But the food you have to start thinking about as an energy source, and you have to start to understand why you're eating certain things too. You know, it's not just about the taste.
Right.
Because you can have all the tasty things in your daily consumption, but it's not just about what your mind enjoys. It's about what your body needs, you know?
Right. Right. Well, yeah. That's an interesting point when it comes to food, because oftentimes we're eating based on some kind of emotion that we're feeling that's maybe not a positive emotion, and the food is sort of self-soothing in the moment, but then we feel dirty and shitty after because of what we ate. And, so it's really good to have that awareness around that. So I think those are two great points. Sis. Like, I mean, if you're starting or you're stuck or doing something, really look at what the activity is, because, not everybody's goal is to step on stage and compete or anything like that. It could be just about having more energy, just feeling better. And, at a certain point in your life too, you're thinking about longevity, and there's so much science based research out there right now about how lifting weights and all, any type of body movement, it just adds so much more to your quality of life as you age as well. So find something you like, but commit to it, as you said too, right? Cause I mean, it's and maybe even, look at working in a group of people or something where everybody's accountable, a challenge or something, just long enough to create the habit where you kind of get into that flow. Because once you embrace the struggle and realize, it's going to hurt sometimes. It's not glamorous grinding it out and sweating it sometimes, but the way you feel after, it's amazing. And it carries over to all these other areas of your life.
Yes. You really have to do one with the other. Like, I notice people, when they want to lose weight, in quotation, the first thing they do is hire a trainer, okay? And then they go and work out and kill themselves, and that they don't change their diet enough. Or they get, recommendations from whatever trainer that they hired. Well, that person isn't a nutritionist, number one. Number two, I'm not saying that they don't have valuable information, but it's not enough to really set you up for success. So I'm a huge fan of people taking the nutrition as serious as the training. And the nutrition is really going to be where you see the results when you clean that up. One tip I could give somebody or anybody out there is, if you really want to see the results, eat the same amounts of protein, carbs, and fat every day. If you're eating a bunch of like heavy fat one day and super high carb the other day and high protein, what you have to kind of think of it as a science experiment. You have to control the variables. And so try to eat the kind of same amounts of food every day to really measure, how your body is changing. Take pictures of yourself once a week. that is a game changer. Stop looking at the scale. And a lot of women, you know, with their menstrual cycles and, oh my God, I'm, you know, water retention, and people will eat carbs and then put a few pounds on. It's water. It's not fat. Okay. Like, it's not. You have to look at what you look like in the mirror. And so pay attention to that, but you've really got to do one with the other. And I say, if you want it, self-accountability, take a picture of yourself every week and really measure. Again, this is a lot of work. This is not something that just anybody's going to do, but you've got to really want it, you know, and what is that worth to you to keep yourself that accountable?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people too, it's, you know, they talk themselves out of it before they even start.
Yes.
Know, they've had an injury over the years. They've had something happen. And, well, I can't do this because, you know, I've got a bad shoulder, or I've got this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people who've been training for decades, who compete at the highest levels in many different sports, who have had serious injuries and surgeries and things over the years, but they work right through it. I mean, I fucking crushed my back on the squat rack
and
broke it, like,
you almost in my paralyzed.
Early 20s, you know, and was carted out of Elfie's gym in the Danforth on a stretcher. And, you know, fuck that. I mean, I'm still paying for that today.
Yeah, I know. So.
But I mean, you know, it doesn't slow me down. It just, you know, you just have to work around those things. So, I mean, there's really no excuse, because the upside of the quality of your life is just, it's worth the effort to do some kind of body movement.
Yeah. Well, let's kind of talk about, you know, limiting beliefs and what people tell themselves and the stories that they repeat in their minds that affect their behavior today. You know, I hear people saying things that basically stop them in their own tracks. And it's not just, you know, and possibly going after a fitness goal. It's in life. You know, I'm a smoker. I'm this, I'm that. They identify with the habit, but all that is a belief. And repeating that over and over to yourself. I've always been I smoke. I'm whatever. They believe it, and they create this storyline about themselves. And then what does that do? They hang out with people, or they actively act out this story of what they think about themselves. I'm not saying, like, look, there are people with obesity issues, you know, real injuries that are preventing people from doing things, but if I could videotape people at LA Fitness, I would love to show you some of the people that I see in there on the daily. I see older gentlemen and ladies coming in on wheelchairs. I see veterans walking in with one leg limping from, you know, a war, from Iraq, or a few tours. You see people that you wouldn't think couldn't get out of a chair working out, because they know that the benefits outweigh, you know, the excuse, and they're not giving an excuse. They're not giving an excuse. So when I see that, and then I listen to somebody that's in perfect shape or perfect health, but they're just, you know, not willing to, like, step it up, and they have this story that they want to tell themselves, then, I mean, that's the difference in the mentality, right? So you got to change your story. You got to change your belief system about what you think you are. You know, always in my mind, I wanted to be what I'm doing now, but there was a lot of years where I didn't think I was that, you know? Right. And when I changed my mind and I said, you know what? I am that. And I'm going to show everybody I am that, because that's what I think about inside. That's who I see myself as. And I became it. And now everybody else, that's all people identify me as with now, because that's what I am. So yeah, if you're limiting belief system or beliefs about yourself, check yourself, because that's stopping you from doing great things in every part of your life. That's what I think.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly what this podcast is about. It's about rewiring your belief system, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, what I touch on this, like, you and I didn't grow up, you know, you were actually probably more in sports than I was, just because you were a regular puberty type person, where I think I hit puberty when I was like 25 or something, but But you know, like, fuck, you know, when you're 4'11", you're not on the football team, right? But though I was, you know, maybe more tenacious in other areas, but so you don't see yourself like that, right? But you know, just to, as an example, I mean, I didn't have the best genetics or anything, but you know, in recent competition, because I started to gain this belief in myself and what I could do, it's like things changed. And you know, last year I was one placing away from an IFBB pro card in my second show.
Right.
And I would have never believed in a million years that I could have done that. Obviously, I would love to have like done one more show to see if I could have got that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is a grueling process, especially on that level. And then to continue to go and compete with, you know, people on the pro level, like it's basically kind of have to be a career move at that point. I mean, you could, but, you know, at our age, like I, this prep is already starting, like I'm already feeling it. I don't have the energy levels that I did, but I'm not using that as an excuse, but I can tell my body needs more recovery.
Okay. Yeah.
Keep it moving.
All right, sis. Well, I think on that note, we'll shut this one down, but, thanks for doing this. And you know what? I think, if anybody's listening, if they made it this far, you know, anybody who's midlife, who isn't doing something physical, really reconsider that. The quality of life, the way you feel, it's going to change everything. And really it's a mindset. So you kind of have to just kind of do some inventory on what you're doing and find some time and schedule some time to move your body and do something. Anything to add to that, sis?
Yeah. I just think it's a wake up call. If you've never worked out your whole life or never had a, you know, even if you start something, you may not like the first thing, the second, third, fourth thing that you try, but try to find something that creates enjoyment in your life and start there. You don't have to do it all at once, but start with maybe a daily practice or three times a week, you know, just to get in the groove and get moving. And once you get rid of the everybody's looking at me or I'm out of my comfort zone or I feel uncomfortable or I'm not doing it right, that will all go away and you'll start to feel more comfortable. You'll start to feel more at ease. You'll start to see results. And when you see those results, boom, it's like a light switch. Then you really start to get into the groove, but give it time. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, me and you, we're 20 years into this. On and off, but on 100% now. But you know, it's taking me 20 years to really adapt all of it. So don't think it's going to happen overnight. It doesn't, and that's totally okay.
Well said, sis. Okay, I love you.
Love
over
you
and
too.
Out. Have a great day.
Yeah, you Ciao. Too. Thanks, everyone, for listening.